We start 2020 with our first All In on Offense episode in this series, and joining me are the co-offensive coordinators at Linfield College, Aaron Bomey and Brett Elliott. Guys, it's great to have you here today.
Good to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Well, guys, I want to get a little background before we dig into some of your offense. And for our listeners out there, these guys have done a phenomenal job here in 2019. They led NCAA Division III in passing. They were number two in completion, number nine in scoring offense, number eight in passing efficiency, number 12 in fumbles lost, and 43 in third down percentage. So these guys across the board are just doing a great job on offense. And we're going to dig into that and get into some specific topics. But we'll start with Aaron first. Aaron, talk to us a little bit just about your background here and everything that's brought you up to this point in coming to Linfield.
Well, I started 2 years here at Linfield in 2009, 2010. Coach Elliott was actually my quarterback coach then, which is pretty cool. We've kind of come full circle since then. And then 2011 was my first. I went to Germany and played some football over in Europe. And then that right after that season, I came back in 2011 and kind of shadowed Coach Elliott, coaching quarterbacks back then. And I've been on staff ever since. So I've been coaching quarterbacks for the last, I guess, 8 years now. And then this is my first year really coaching receivers here. So,
Coach Elliott, yourself?
I originally played at Utah, University of Utah, or 2003, and then transferred here and finished out in 04 and 05, won a national championship. And then I played kind of professionally for a while up until really about 2010. Kind of coached part-time here and then was at Mississippi State for 3 years, then went up to James Madison University in Virginia for a year, and then Texas State for a year, and then back to Mississippi State for a year, and then back to Texas State. So got all the moves in, and I'm not going to move anymore.
Both of you guys had the opportunity to play after college. Aaron, you were over in Europe. Now, I had a quarterback when I was at BW. He was going to go and play for a few years and then find a job. And he's still doing it. He graduated in 2010. He's still out there playing. He's the head coach, offensive coordinator, and quarterback. And I think he's kind of kicked around. He's in Slovenia now. His original goal was he was just going to play on every continent. Play football on every continent was the goal. And he actually, last year around this time, I got to turn around and look at my shelf. Yeah, he wrote a book, and it's called Have You Tried Working? The name of the guy's Anthony Gardner. And he's just wrote a book on his experiences. And, you know, in his mind, most of his friends, well, most of us think, you know, that guy's never really had a job yet. Like, he's just been kicking around, having fun, playing football. He's got great stories. He's still over there doing that. You know, he's thought about it. For 1 year, he came home in between, and he was an intern for us at BW and did a great job. And he's like, yeah, you guys work too hard. I'm going back to Europe. So with those experiences and then going into coaching, you know, how much has that added to, I guess, you know, overall what you think you bring to the table as a coach, having some experience after college? You know, one of you playing in the pros, other playing in Europe.
Yeah, I thought it was an amazing experience. We've had actually quite a few players, Linfield guys in the past decade, go over there and play in Germany. And it's been, you know, one, you just get a great experience. And I was really fortunate with the team. I went over there, they're actually the Schwäbisch Hall Unicorns, really cool town, really tight-knit community. And I think that's what makes it over there, is you got to find the right place, you know, that really enjoys football, enjoys the team. And you get a coach over there too. You know, you have a lot of experience when you go over there compared to some of the people that are playing, and you get to coach the guys up. You get to have a lot of influence on the offense and all that stuff. So that was pretty fun, you know. And then I got to just come back. I wish I would have done it for another year or two. Honestly, it was pretty cool experience for me.
Brett, you said you played in the pros. What teams you played with?
Yeah, I got a kind of a cup of coffee with the Chargers for a couple years, practice squad. Played most of my football in the arena league. Did that for a few years over in NFL Europe for a year. And I think the benefit to my experience is just subjected to a lot of different types of football and offense. And yeah, I know one of our top red zone routes that we run is kind of a corner post option by the slot, and that's the number one route in arena ball. You know, it's 2x1, and the high motion guys running a poco, and So we run that for a while. I got that kind of from arena ball. So that's kind of the benefit that I take, and just different football minds, being around, being on a bunch of different teams, seeing how other guys approach offenses and kind of manage offenses and structure from practice plans to, you know, play calls.
Right, right. Now, I've talked to a few guys who have played the arena ball, even coached it a little bit, and then, you know, come back to, you know, the full field 11-man game, and they've been able to maybe pick up a few things that maybe typically you wouldn't think about. And that you mentioned your red zone pass. Have you found that you go back to some of that stuff and look at how you might get movement or how you might work in tight spaces, compress sets, whatever it might be, to, you know, bring some things in from, you know, what you learned there?
I think one of the, you know, receiver play wise, big thing was, you obviously can't hide, you know, motion in outdoor football, regular football, but the skip release stuff I kind of learned from that. You know, we use that a lot for just creating separation for different level routes. And then also availability to go off, you know, in arena ball, you're getting the hard jam at the line of scrimmage. And so it helps with that as well. And so that's probably one of the main things that kind of picked up from that.
For our listeners, talk us through just the basics of a skip release.
Yeah, basically, you know, it's a lot of it's kind of caught like, it's basketball. I use a lot of basketball analogy. I think it's kind of like you're trying to get up on a defender's toes and basically freeze his feet. And so basically just you're taking your normal pre-snap stance, and then on the snap of the ball, kind of coming off, trying to lull the defender to sleep. And then if he's a hard jam, you're able to kind of slip it and use his momentum against himself and swim it. So I think it kind of has a dual purpose in that sense.
And so you guys got to reunite. You mentioned, Aaron, you played for Brett back when you played. And so now you guys are working together. What's that experience been like in moving from, you know, being the guy who played for him now to being a guy who works with him?
I think it's been really smooth. You know, one of the things that, like he mentioned, I think his last year was 2011 before, you know, he kind of made his rounds out east. We got to coach together for 1 year, I think, if I remember correctly. And we had lived together and coached, you know, I basically kind of shadowed. I, you know, worked some odd jobs and just made it work because it was kind of halfway through the season or something. But that was a good time. Obviously, we got to get to know each other besides a player-coach kind of dynamic there. So I think when he came back, and obviously he's just excited to be back on the West Coast too, you know, jumping around and coming back home. I think it's been, you know, we've both been all kind of down to get down for whatever, which kind of works well with us too. We, one of us has an idea. I think we kind of just say, we trust each other a lot and just say, yeah, let's go with it. Let's see what happens. And then if we're also pretty candid in terms of, yeah, I don't like that. You know, let's kind of, I know one thing we preach here is low ego, high output. So try to have a, all right, if somebody doesn't like that, then let's talk about it and let's just get it right, whatever it takes to just kind of get it right and have the best product on the field.
You know, I've always talked to co-coordinators just about their workflow and how they put things together. But, you know, as I was thinking about, you know, as we're getting ready for this interview, thinking about asking you this question, you know, within a team, certainly you have your overall culture, but everybody is responsible for each piece of it. And, you know, offense works a little bit different than defense, and there's the mentality behind it and the mindset and, you know, the beliefs you have, the behaviors you want to get those results. You know, what is it that you guys have done, I guess, to build the culture on your side of the ball together? What does that look like for you?
You know, I mean, the culture for me was already pretty established in terms of, you know, I mean, the staff's been here together for the past 20 plus years. So, okay, it's easy for me coming in and just kind of adapting to it. So I don't know how much setting that I did per se. I know one thing on offense that we did preach a lot this year was, you know, it's kind of attention to details and being physical and primer with receivers and blocking. And then also just enjoying it more. I think that's a big thing. Enjoying it while holding our guys accountable. Aaron could probably speak more to culture that's been set over the last 10 years or so.
Yeah, I think Linfield's culture is certainly something that we hold, you know, close to us. And anybody who knows Linfield football kind of understands the tradition and kind of what goes into it. That's kind of what the secret sauce of what Linfield is just our culture and how we go about things. And so obviously we take that, you know, into the offensive, you know, game plan, so to speak. But I think one of the things that our receiving corps in particular did this year was just take a mindset of being tough, you know, being guys that are really accountable, you know, guys that oftentimes can be perceived as pretty boys or, you know, soft, you know, just because they're the skill guys or whatever. But I felt like our receiving corps tried to really be overtly hard workers, you know, really trying to set the example. And I think that helped us throughout the year, you know, being leaders on the team, not just guys that, you know, hopefully they make plays.
And our staff was, you know, the staff's been here for so long. That's a big advantage too. The offensive line coach has been the offensive line coach for 30 years, I don't know, forever. And he's awesome and he's great at it. And so, you know, we just have a lot of trust in the coaches on the staff. Running back coach has been here coaching for 10 plus years. And so, you know, just like on every team, you know, we're an offense, but then also you got your own positions that have to be held accountable and do their job. And I thought our staff's unreal in terms of that. And, I think that's why we have such good production every year. Not only do we have good players, we have great teachers as well as great motivators.
How would you guys categorize your offense? I think that's more and more a difficult thing to do today. You used to be able to really easily identify this is what we are. And, you know, certainly now with, I know you guys run some spread, but, you know, spread can mean a lot of different things. For you guys, what does your offense look like?
Yeah, we're 11 personnel, so we're shotgun based, you know, 95% of the time, and we'll be an 11. Unfortunately for our poor tight end, about 98% of the time, so he was quite a stud this year. But in terms of our run game, we're more inside zone, a little bit of counter and power mixed in. With some speed option and some draws, obviously. The passing game-wise, we're big play action off the inside zone. And then also our quarterback this year, we were really prolific at the bootleg game and the naked game. And probably, you know, a mixture between pistol and offset gun. So kind of our base, our very pro-style passing game. You know, we try to get 4 or 5 out on most of our routes. A lot of empty passing game.
What concepts are you guys running in the passing game?
Throw flats, top down reads, sweep reads, you know, left to right, your triangle series stuff, quick game. Probably the best thing that, you know, that we did this year, besides our naked game, was our RPO game off inside zone. We're cutting off the backside with the tight end. So you get your two-man, you know, 3-by-1 formations where you get your two-man game out to the field. And then a single match up to the boundary. And our quarterback did a great job of managing that game and having the ability to hand off and enroll or cover two coverages and then take our shots in one high or man coverages. And some games, you know, we go in with 75, 80 plays and we'd only get to 20 because that was such a good set for us.
So with that, and you mentioned really it's about how you guys do things, and you could look at anybody's playbook and find a lot of commonalities, maybe find a lot of common concepts, but I think it's always in the details. It's always in how you do it and how you coach it, and really probably the organization for the players. So how you teach it for you guys, what sets that apart and what does make this something, obviously you guys are executing at a high success rate. What are the things that make this thing go for you?
The guys we have. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's always that, yeah.
We ran the same plays last year at Texas State. And, you know, I love those guys, but, you know, just we did not, you know, have the same success. I mean, I'm a big believer. And I know you probably don't want to hear this from the listeners. They're looking for coaching tips, but, yeah, you got to have your dude a quarterback. You got to have some guys that can roll at receiver. I mean, we definitely had that this year.
Yeah, it certainly made me look good. my first year coaching receivers, and we really had four guys that we really that had speed and talent and catch the ball and all have their different strengths. And our tight end is kind of that fifth guy who was our glue guy, and he was just gutting it out and getting it done every game. So and our running backs too. We had multiple running backs being able to catch the ball out of the backfield. And but I think in terms of our system that we really enjoyed this year, I thought the thing that we did better this year than in some years past is just having really trying to teach the system and not get away from, not try to teach plays and really always come back to our rules, always come back to, you know, how we do things so that when we got later in the season, we could easily adjust to let our players, they knew what they were doing. And we had young guys playing too, you know, freshman running backs, freshman receivers, contributing, freshman tight ends a little bit. And so I think when you were able to kind of teach them the system, you know, and concept and conceptually the plays we're trying to get, that we could move guys around, get the matchups we wanted, not necessarily run, hey, I run this route, this formation when I'm the single side guy, you know, and try not to get away from that and say, this is the big picture and help our guys understand the big picture. And I think obviously Coach Elliott did a great job, proof's in the pudding with Wyatt this year in terms of how he read the field and just really got the ball to the guys when they needed to get the ball.
And, you know, it's the simplest thing, kind of add what Aaron was saying, in conceptually teaching. You know, when you're doing your playbook, instead of having X, Z, Y, R, you know, whatever your slot is called, listed on the plays, you know, through pass plays, you just put concept one, concept two, concept three, backside one. So that way, you know, I mean, big thing, as most coaches know, you want to get the right matchups. So instead of having only the X knows his X routes, well, it's not X route, it's right. Backside one route. And so it doesn't matter where you are on the field, you know, tied our top, one of our top down reads. If you're one, you have a, you know, what we call a syrup route. If you're two, you have a sail route. If you're three, you have an arrow route or a flat route. And we run it out of every formation. And so sometimes it's the quote unquote Z running the arrow, but sometimes it's he's running the syrup. So our guys learn, I think that does help a lot to teach it that way.
Yeah, I got to ask, because I don't know what a syrup route is, but it's so tight as I imagine, as you described, it's a flood concept or an oblique stretch. What's the syrup route to you, or what's in the teaching of that, I guess?
Yeah, so we teach our syrup route. Coach Bomey kind of came up with that with his receivers. It's kind of a fun motivator. As everybody knows, the flood route, the number one, the outside one, has to take the top off. And it's not always easy to do that consistently, especially if you're not throwing it, for guys to stay motivated. So I think Coach Bomey came up with the syrup term to help them stay motivated. But what we do a little differently, you know, in the past, you've read it too high, you're running a post, one high, you're just running a go route by field one on the flood concept. But we changed that to kind of an inside, we call it inside go, where you don't want to, you want, if it's cover three, you don't want to go outside the corner. You want to try to take him with you to the post a little bit without having the ability to pass off to the safety. Because if you post it too much, he just comes off on the corner route. So we keep that as skinny as possible, but we want to go inside to draw his attention. And then the key thing on the flood route is to get separation between the corner and your go route, or your into what we call our syrup route. And so what we do is a variety of different things. One, you can run it off and over. Since we run a lot of naked and bootleg, we run a lot of over routes by our slots. You can lose. We call lose, which is you're running away from the sideline. And then you want to lose and then get vertical and then snap back out to the corner to create that separation. You want about 10, 12 yards of vertical separation from your syrup route. And then the third guy, whether he's coming from the backfield or from a split receiver position, he's just getting to the flat area, 3 to 4 yards as quick as possible to draw up the flat center.
Talk to me about how you guys created that term and what it means to you.
Honestly, it came from just not wanting to say inside go. You know, it was really, and then the other part, like Coach mentioned, we just had a, you know, a little thing with our receivers in terms of I wanted them to make sure that they emphasized blocking. And so we came up with, you know, a little break of pancakes. You know, we want to get blocks. Pancakes meant getting guys on the ground or springing balls for touchdowns. So that's kind of where the syrup came from. Just syrup meant scoring touchdowns. Pancakes meant getting blocks. So that's kind of where that came from. But, yeah, the inside go is kind of the technical term we use where we – it's not a go route. It's an inside go. And they're really trying to attack the inside hand of the corner.
Coach, for your quarterback on that, and I like, you know, again, how you teach things. That's how my playbook, at least at some point, you know, probably after 3-4 years of being a coordinator, got to, you know, more of that concept-based teaching where you're not identifying exactly who that is because it could be, you know, it depends on the formations you get into. Talk to us about the quarterback on that and, you know, creating that consistent read because you don't get to completing 70% of passes. Yeah, you got to have that guy, but, you know, you also have to have a great operating system for him too. So his reads on that.
We kind of put everything in categories. So that's your top-down read, what we call top-down. So we'll read that inside go or your syrup to your sail route corner to your flat or your arrow. And it's just top-down and deep defender flat to the flat defender. And, you know, I learned from Urban Meyer a long time ago playing at Utah that, you know, you on zone defense, you got to throw away from defenders. You can't throw to receivers. So you avoid interceptions and staring things down. So basically what I teach quarterbacks, if it's one high, the deep defender is the corner, and he's got to read him and then find the flat defender. And then if it's too high, it's probably going to be the safety. And then if he's flat-footed, if it's quarters, then we can throw him inside a little bit more to throw him away from the corner if that safety does stay flat-footed. If he gets depth, now we're on to the flat defender. Obviously, roll, you know, cover two is kind of your top-down beater just because the safety can take away the inside go. And then the corner has great eyes and levers to sink and play both the sail and the arrow. So that's where we have, you know, try to put something backside to work on versus roll coverage that way or cover two anytime the corner is the flat defender.
I definitely want to go more into your passing game. I want to go back, though. You said 95% in the gun. Now, you guys go under center some then the rest of the time?
No, I mean, mostly short yardage. Yeah, short yardage or unbalanced stuff. But we won't run much drop back pass or any at all from under center.
Yeah, that's a trend we started to see as we watched. There's three of us who did a series we called Trends Day. Every week we just talk about, you know, all the games we watched, and we probably between all of us watched 20 some games either on the TV, probably most of the time, either on Game Pass or just watching cut-ups of the previous weekend. And we did see more and more of the teams that traditionally have just only been in gun start to go under center a little bit. And it was primarily to run, for a lot of them, it was the outside zone and then play action off of it. I don't think I saw any of those teams run any drop back. But, you know, was that kind of the mentality that you guys had? It was going to be to run the football and get some good play action?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously the play action game is so much better from under center. So, you know, that was kind of our, you know, short yardage stuff. Or, you know, most of our under center stuff was two tight end or three tight end stuff. But, you know, it's funny, you think back and, you know, when I played, you know, everything was under center. But then the coach would always give you the option, okay, third down, you can go to gun. You know, it's always easier to throw from there. So I think that's probably why it's easier, you know, in a way. And you lose the, you know, back in the day, you lose the run threat of being shotgun because the zone read stuff hadn't really taken off. So it was all pass. It was a big tendency. So teams would say, okay, well, you can't just be in gun every time if you want to be able to run the ball. So I think that's kind of where it's gone. So now if you're under center, now if you're shotgun, you're able to run the ball, then you can be in a pass situation because I think it is obviously more advantageous to throw the ball from shotgun just because of your vision is much clearer.
Right, and you mentioned that the boot and the naked were one of your best things this year. I imagine you're doing some of that from the gun or the pistol as well then?
Didn't run much at all, if any, pistol from offset. Was all, or excuse me, naked from offset. It was all from pistol, just because the, you know, you just hide the ball better. I think it times out better with the routes. You know, we run a little longer developing routes. you know, we run our flood concept. That was our best deal. Our tied play from the naked, and I just think that the action is so much better in terms of, you can give a little longer sell backs to the defensive ends. You're hiding the ball. Obviously, the one that scares you is the field blitz. So we work hard on that. It's probably the main thing we work on nakeds, is pulling up and getting depth on the field blitz and finding where they're replacing, whether it's to the flat or it's to the over.
And then the runs off of that, you were looking primarily, were you going that off of your inside zone stuff, or would you run your nakeds off of everything?
We run our naked off our outside zone, so it's kind of a little bit bastardized because we towards the end of the year, we weren't running too much outside zone. And maybe that's why, you know, our naked wasn't as good towards the end of the year. And so that's something we need to look at. And, you know, why wasn't it as good? Well, you know, one, we're probably playing better teams. Two, you know, I don't know, we weren't running as much outside zone. It was more, our effective runs were the fast hitting inside zone. And so teams maybe were not respecting as much.
Had a similar situation when I was at BW. And I mean, we wanted to, I guess, be a little bit more pro style, run some play action, run naked. And, you know, we're looking at it in that particular year. We just didn't like, you know, maybe some of the skill sets we had to be able to run and be an outside zone team, but we wanted to run naked. So we were in pistol for all of it. And basically we just set up our terminology, set up the way we call play that we would run naked off of really anything. So we were pin and pull power. We wouldn't run a little bit off of counter, not as much, an inside zone. Even a little bit of duo. And so we would just call the run and then tag naked to it. And that allowed us to be able to do some of those things and sell those runs. And the other thing, I was kind of excited to see some of it this year. I saw Alabama do it. I saw a couple other colleges. And I think I saw it in the NFL a few times, is when we were in the pistol, we actually started, we just reversed out on everything. So quarterback would catch the, I mean, we told him we're turning him into an old single wing spinner fullback. I mean, he'd catch the ball and turn around and get his back to the defense. And we found, for us at least, it kind of helped the timing and the tempo of the play and sell the run, because we always felt like those guys would get real itchy to get out of there too quick when you just turned it open to the guy and the hands didn't look good. And, you know, what we found, we played around with it in spring ball, and our defense, you know, we went over to them immediately, like after every, you know, team segment, and talked to them and say, you know, how's that look to you? What are you seeing? Like, we're losing the ball. We can't find it because you guys are turning your back to us momentarily. And that's exactly what we wanted. So that was something that helped there. And I think, because, yeah, you think a lot of times your best, you usually set that up, or traditionally you're going to run your nakeds off of the outside zone play. So anyway, that was something we looked at and worked into what we were doing, became pretty good at the naked portion of things, and then tagged some other routes in.
I'd agree. I mean, in the past, we've done a lot more inside zone from our pistol, where we actually do turn our back. And just this year with much more RPO, we, you know, even if we are in the pistol, we're rarely boot faking a lot on inside zone or power. And so we just kind of, I think that's what Coach Elliott did well, just try to marry those. I mean, if we're going to turn our back, it's outside zone, and that just happens to be the best thing to play action on. So, and we've been a big outside zone team in the past, so that wasn't necessarily, even if we weren't running it later in the season, I think teams really always had to be aware of it.
So then from a production standpoint in your passing game, you guys averaged almost 379.2 yards per game in the pass. What were the, you know, the best concepts for you? I know we talked about Tide. You really didn't say where that was in the mix, but, you know, what were the best concepts for you in 2019?
Yeah, I'd say Tide won, and then we ran off our naked, we ran basically a counter, so the throwback. So, you know, you're selling naked to the field, and then you snap a setup, and you're throwing your top-down read to the boundary with crossers coming to the boundary. You know, that was a good play for us. You know, our RPO with two in the slot, basically running inside fade and the outside guy running the hitch burst. And you get one high. We had a couple big, we hit some big plays on that.
We sprint really well as well. It's one of our top things that we do. You know, Coach Hire does a great job with the protection. And, you know, shoot, we feel like we can sprint at any time because of the protection. And we run, you know, three or four routes off of that that we feel pretty good. Your smash concept, your kind of double out concepts, you know, switch hooks, arrow curl, you know, pretty standard stuff, but we teach it well and we rep it, and the quarterbacks do a good job of taking what the defense gives them on that. So sprinting's big for us. That kind of marries along with the boot stuff. Our quarterback is pretty good at throwing on the run a little bit. So that helps.
You know, I can think back just to a couple of weeks ago watching Ohio State and Michigan play, and everybody was talking about Chase Young, and you know, he didn't have a sack in that game, and they're talking about what a great job they were doing protecting against him. But you know, I thought what Michigan did really well was two things. Number one, the ball was out. This guy was not really looking to go very deep into his progression, and they did a great job, I think, of getting their tight ends open pretty quickly. And a lot of times he was just plant throw, throwing on rhythm, not really taking any hit steps. And then the other is they did move him around a little bit, right? They got a little bit of that play action, getting him moving to different places, which I think really helps your protection. So from a protection side of things, obviously you're not going to throw 380 yards a game if you're not doing a good job up front. What's the philosophy up front, and how do you guys get protected against the different things that you're going to see?
I think you said it. We move around a lot. We did have a young O-line. They got better as the year went on. But we try to move the quarterback around, sprint, naked, half sprint, naked throwback. So, you know, just change the launch point. And then we'll do some stuff. You know, if the team's got a good pass rusher, we'll chip them or, you know, make sure we're sliding the protection that way. In terms of protection, we put a lot on the quarterback. You will, you know, make, you know, most of our protections are half man, half slide. And so we put it on him to kind of get the slide to where the pressure's coming from. So that's kind of the main things in our protection schemes that we try to set.
You know, as I've gone through this game and coached in different conferences, I've found that conferences start to get, you know, some parity in what they're doing. And so what you see maybe in one conference, they might do much differently. Maybe, you know, one conference is full of quarters teams and then another one's a zone pressure team. And I don't know if they just see success and start to parity that. But, you know, I was talking with a defensive coach at Division II level, and you know, he talked about some different trends he was seeing this year across his conference. And for them, it was a, you know, like a pin and pull, regardless of if it was a 7 or 9. But from the defensive side, as you guys look back at 2019, what were some things that felt like you started to see again and again and had to prepare for almost every week?
Well, what was different for me this year was I was in the Sun Belt 2 out of the last 3 years, and that's all 4-eye stuff. I mean, it's all 4-eye, semi-bear, you know, getting the 4-man rushes in a variety of different ways. You know, here you saw more just junk. I don't know.
Like, you know, it's kind of funny. I was going to say that, like, we tried to warn Brett and, like, hey, you know, we see a lot of stuff, you know. It's something about our conference. I don't know what it is. Teams like to – I think part of it is that teams think they got a lot of smart guys, which they do. You know, we're a high kind of academic conference for the most part, like a lot of D3 places are. But – and so I think a lot of the teams think they can do a lot of stuff and just – they try to really out-scheme us a lot if they think that they can't outmatch us physically. So we do see a lot of defense, you know. We'll see teams that, shoot, I mean, I can't count the number of times that we've just come out to a game and we see a defense that we haven't seen all year from them in terms of literally going from a 30 front to a 40 front or vice versa, or, you know, going from quarters to all one high, or, you know, they're going to go a bunch of cover two, or, you know, whatever it is. They just do something that they haven't shown on films. That's always been a strength of ours, is seeing something on film and then take advantage of that. So it's kind of funny that did happen. We see a lot of
cover two.
Yeah, a lot of cover two.
Cover two is new. You know, I haven't seen that really since high school. It seems like it's kind of had a comeback.
Yeah.
You know, first, second down, cover two.
And I feel like in the last couple of years, a lot more just one high, trying to take away RPOs. And for us in our league this year, that was an advantage to us because we had such fast receivers. And that's like, all right, we got the matchups. Let's go. Let's get what we want and protect. And that's why we threw for a lot of yards in some games because teams would give it to us, you know. And then when we got the two high defense or the cover two, or some teams were going max cover eight zone, and all right, now we can run the ball. Makes it a lot easier to run the ball now.
In that regard, and seeing the junk defenses, you know, the challenges, right? You've practiced all week long. You saw something. You come out, and now in that first couple series, you see something that's different than what you had. You know, for you guys, making those adjustments and, number one, getting them communicated, seeing them through all your coaches, whoever's in the press box, whatever it might be, as well as getting some feedback from your players. What's the process for you guys in game to be able to make some of those adjustments, and what do you look to do? Is it a tweak to the scheme? Is it go to maybe some different concepts? How do you guys typically like to handle that?
I've always thought the main adjustments need to be made up front. I think our O-line coach did a really great job all year long. That's where you're going to get the most, you know, intricacies of what you're seeing different and what you need to do differently. Is it a four technique? Is it a four eye? You know, how would you need to adjust the blocking schemes? And so, you know, he did a really good job all year. But in terms of, like, play calling, it's kind of just find what works. And, you know, as the season went on, you know, you got to find your identity and especially in a run game, what you're going to hang your hat on. And so that was a little bit of a struggle for us this year, is finding what we can do well up front with the young O-line. And so it was nice, about halfway through the year, we kind of settled on the inside zone. But in terms of game by game, I think most of the credit has to go to our offensive line coach. I don't know. Coach Bowman's on the sideline more than I am, obviously, and so he can probably attest to that more.
No, yeah, I think the other part that we try to do, you know, we try to assign our coaching staff to certain things, look for certain things. I task my receivers that aren't playing as much to chart the safeties and corners. So I want to know what they're doing on every play. And just in case, you know, as a staff, we miss it. And, all right, what were they doing on that one play? Did they roll to the field? Did they sky to the boundary? Whatever it was. So we try to just get a lot, as much information as we can. But like Brett said, I don't think if you have a pretty good system, I don't think you want to change your play calling a ton. It's going to be, hopefully your plays are good against a lot of different things and you have small adjustments. Maybe you change the backside of a route, or maybe you haven't run a play in a while and it's really good against quarters and this team came out in quarters. That's fine. But for the most part, most of your routes should be pretty good.
Yeah, we have
most everything.
And the way we build our offense is, you know, we kind of have answers for everything. And we have a training camp, basically menu. And that's all we do each week is, we don't come in and say, oh, okay, they're running this defense. What plays can we come up with to beat it? Well, we have a whole menu. We just literally go down and pick from the menu what plays. And so, like, our guys get confidence in that. And like Coach was saying, sometimes you need to go something you didn't completely plan for at all. And you go back to the training camp. I always bring one of those up with me to the box just in case I need a refresher or need a pull from that training camp menu.
And I think one more thing, props to our defense, too. Our defense is a hell of a defense as well. They run a lot of stuff. So we see it. We see it in spring ball. We see it in camp. They might not run every single thing, every single game, but they practice and do a lot of different things that challenge our offense. So that really does help us. We get a great look against great talent when we go ones versus ones.
Yeah, and I want to talk about your game plan, but the one thing I guess we haven't touched on yet in terms of, you know, what's happening out there on the field on game day is the tempo side of things or the procedure side of things. How do you guys like to operate on game day? Are you no huddle, go fast all the time? Are you multiple tempos? Do you get in a huddle? You know, what is it for you guys?
You know, we're kind of semi-pro. Our quarterback's pretty slow. You know, he's sitting right behind me right now. But, you know, I'd like him to be faster, to be honest. But he's kind of a diligent guy and wants to get it right. So I appreciate that part about him. But no, we have ability. We have something we call our NASCARs. And they're basically plays that we've designed. They're our base plays, and we give assign a number to each one. And that gives us the ability to not have to signal a whole play. And, you know, about nine of them, we probably use two or three of them consistently. But that's a way for us to kind of go super fast. And then we, you know, kind of teach it as, okay, well, I know it's, you know, Trey Ram, Chill Tide is the play call. right? But NASCAR, too, I want it to be fast. I don't need all the checks and the reads and all that stuff. It's just run it and play it, and it's on the play caller if it's wrong.
I think tempo-wise, we try to, like you said, try to get things right, but I like how we do things in terms of we're going to go the tempo we need to go. You know, we're not going to, if it's a fast game, if we're going, things are going well, we're going to go pretty fast. If it's, you know, if our defense needs a break, we need to go slow, you know. So you got to be able to adjust. I think just controlling the tempo is what is more important than just going a certain speed, you know, being able to control the snap count. You know, I see team after team when I watch football, like, not change their snap count. And I've never really understood that for some teams. I understand not getting a penalty, but being able to just give your offensive line, especially in your quarterback, a head start on what the defense is doing. I thought we did a good job of that this year, just being able to go fast sometimes where they're out of position, okay? And then you go normal speed, and then you go a little slower, do some double counts or whatever, and get a head start on the defense.
It is, I think, an underutilized part of the game. I would agree with you there. And, you know, I've been able to, these last 3 years away from the grind of coaching every day, been able to study some things and look at these NFL guys don't have to recruit, so they have all kinds of time on their hands. But, you know, they go through and they study their different snap counts, their different procedures, and how well they work and where the opportunities might be. I've seen some of those reports, and I kind of was just in awe of the detail of that, right? It's not just, you know, go on one or go on two. Like, they have a whole series of things that basically draws all the information they want out of the defense or puts the defense in a bad situation. And, you know, like I said, I think it is. I agree with you. It's underutilized, and I think a huge opportunity for the teams who pay attention to it and do it well. You know, kind of shifting gears here and getting into both the game planning, but also how you guys handle that in a co-coordinator role. And I think everybody does that where they assign things, but how do you guys like to divide the labor? What does it look like for you guys on the weekend between, you know, the two of you and the rest of your staff?
Coach Elliott said earlier, like, you know, it's a little bit of a menu thing, and we like to chunk up certain situations by day a little bit, you know, first down, third down, goal line, red zone, kind of do that throughout the week and start with the base stuff. But really, it's a situation where obviously your coordinator, your play caller, Coach Elliott's got to do the majority of it. You know, if he's calling the plays, I really do believe that he's got to have the master plan in mind in terms of what he wants to run on Saturday. And so a lot of it is just trying to find the menu and see what works, see what we like. And then I'm doing the same thing, you know, and kind of bouncing ideas back and forth. And our O-line coach has his few ideas here and there. And our head coach, too, coaches our tight end. So, you know, it's definitely a group process. And like I said, the ability to kind of have feedback quickly with each other and not be super hurt if your play is not taken or, you know, that sort of thing helps the process go faster. And I thought we've taken the least amount of time in terms of game planning this last year than we have, you know, honestly, since I've been here. And I think that was in a lot of ways a good thing, you know, just trying to, we know what we should be, we know what we need to hang our hat on, and we know what some plays that we're going to run most every game. So it helped to kind of not over dissect things at times, I think.
Yeah, I mean, for you know, the main thing for us is finding a run for the week, and you know, a couple runs. And I'm a big guy. You know, I need to get 4 yards. You know, what play just gets us 4 yards? What can we hang our hat on? We're gonna run the same pass concepts, and we're not changing. We've banked so many, you know, thousands of reps at them. We're not, why add one play we haven't ever run? Just to, it might be a little bit better of an angle or leverage, but you know, it's not worth losing all the banked reps. So, yeah, game plan, I mean, it's during the week, it's Sunday, it's first, second down. Monday, first, second down, and then start getting third down on Tuesdays. Red zones on Wednesdays, and then we do more of a walkthrough on Thursday, and then a full-speed jog through on Friday. And that's kind of a thing I really like doing that it's for me as well, is because it helps me as a play caller. And I think it helps the guys. Yeah, I haven't talked to all the guys yet in postseason meetings. But on Fridays, we do drives. So basically, it's got that from Coach Mullen at Mississippi State. Basically, we do
the ones will get 4 9-play drives, and they're up tempo, they're full speed, they're game like, we're signaling, and we usually script the openers, so that first drive's the openers, and if the top plays want to hit against the defenses we expect, and so I think it gives our confidence, our guys confidence. I'm on them hard to be, no balls in the ground. What this thing is, it's more of a confidence thing than anything towards the end of the week.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of teams, and actually it was a focus quite a bit when we would talk about practice this past offseason, just talking about that Fast Friday concept. And I know Noel Mazzoni specifically talked about it. We had Kurt Hester from strength and conditioning coach from Louisiana Tech come on and share some info. I think even Georgia Tech, their director of strength and conditioning, talked about it a little bit too. And it seems to be something really catching on, but coaches liking the aspect of, you got your two padded days, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then slowing it down, or like Noel likes to call it, sweeping the corners, right? Making sure you got all the details, at least on the mental side, taken care of. What does that look like for you guys on a Thursday in terms of the time and, I guess, how you put together the structure of the practice?
Thursday's just a walkthrough, and it's the easiest scripting day for me because I just go down the whole game plan and just go from by formation and just we run all our plays, basically just step through all our plays. More of a mental day, signals, splits, communication, calls, and we run it against the scout team. There's a scout team out there, but quarterback doesn't throw the ball, the receivers don't run. It's just purely a mental day.
How long is that day for you?
I mean, still, it's what, 2.5 hour practice? Yeah. 2 hours?
And then warm ups.
Yeah. We practice a long time.
Players that liked it, though?
Yeah, I think guys really liked it. Mostly the skill guys. It's guys that are taxed physically in terms of just running. So the DBs and the receivers just feel like you kind of have 2 days rest before game day. We've been doing it for quite a few years now. It's been pretty consistent. We try to get in the ice baths on Thursdays. Really try to think of Thursday as a recovery day and a mental day, and then Friday as a kind of ramp up into the weekend and get a little sharper physically as you get towards game day.
Performance-wise, at least, looking at from, I don't know, I got the idea, maybe I'm wrong. You guys did this for the first time this year as far as the Fast Friday?
No, we've been doing that for probably, I want to say maybe 6-7 years.
Yeah, Oregon. Chip Kelly's dead down in Oregon. Yeah, and so we went down there, adapted, and saw that. And our head coach really liked that, and our strength coach, talked to their guy.
So from the physical perspective, though, you definitely have seen the benefits of that as well.
I think it's it's, in some ways it's a mental thing. We don't have a lot of highbrow physical. Actual measurables that we can prove, but I think our guys say that they feel better, which is good. And I do think, along with the confidence thing, in some ways your game plan is done earlier and your players really have two days to really feel good about it, and I like that aspect of it as well.
So I guess one last question just about this year and looking back at it again, if you were to we've talked about a lot of different aspects of it, but to go through between the two of you and say, maybe 2, 3, 4 keys to the way you guys were able to, like I said, lead the country in passing, obviously do it very well, be very efficient at it, number 8, and number 2 in completion rate. What were the keys to being able to do that? Or if you were talking to a coach out there who wanted to get good at things, what would you tell them? These are really the things I think you should focus on to be able to get better in your passing game.
Run less concepts.
Come on, run the ball.
No. No, run less concepts. Have your plays and stick with them and get good at them and have answers and have enough so you have answers for everything. And then be able to, put some window dressing on it and hide them, but keep the same concepts. I think that's the big one. Have good players, obviously.
But I think one of the other things along with that is, you want to run less concepts, but then also be able to adjust too, right? We've got advantages on our roster at this position, this position, this position, and how can I you know, like literally last year we had an all region running back who ran for 1,000 yards, and this year we were the, you know, whatever, the top passing team or whatever. And so it was, we have a system, and but we were able to tailor it to what we needed to do that year, you know. So that's, I really believe that's big for coaches. You got to be able to adjust to your talent, and your system needs to be able to adjust to that too.
And then last question I have for you guys, you know, as you're going into 2020 off season here and getting prepared for things, what's something you want to study and learn more about this year, whether it's something on the offensive side of the ball or the defensive side of the ball?
Yeah, screen game. Yeah, I've never been ever part of a good screen offense. And I, week after week, I watch kind of, you know, you're watching opponents and teams hit these screens, and it's like, you know, I've never been a good screen on a good screen team. That's my number one exciting thing to do this offseason.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I know be at the convention, I want to, you know, listen to a little bit more on one thing. I've never been a good team is four verts team. I know a lot of teams do a lot of four verts, and I've always tried to pick guys' brains on that. You know, there's a lot less cover three, just straight zone drop cover three these days, where back where I was playing or Coach Elliott was playing, and got to be able to adjust to a lot of the different coverages nowadays and that four verts and how they read it. And I know that's something that I always been interested in, but never fully committed to, you know, in our offense. We run some, but not to the extent of some teams.
We had a coach by the name of AJ Smith on, and he's been Hal Mumme's right-hand man, and they're kind of in a, you know, they got that air raid certification out there now, and they have the virtual reality stuff. AJ joined us on the podcast, and we'll put a link in our show notes here as well, but we had about an hour-long session just talking about four verticals. That's one you probably would enjoy, at least to get you started here, thinking about some four verticals for 2020. Guys, my final question, every podcast kind of took from one of my favorite books, Finding the Winning Edge by Bill Walsh. So the question really for each of you is, as you look at all the things you do as a coach, and it doesn't necessarily have to be X's and O's, but what's the one thing you'd point to that you do as a coach that gives your players the winning edge?
I think, you know, I've met with a lot of my receivers postseason now, and just talking to them, I felt like something I really focused on this year. One, it was my first year coaching receivers after doing quarterbacks for a long time. And so I really wanted to just let them play. I did not want to clutter their minds with too much. I wanted them to know their assignment really, really well, and then let their talent go, you know? And so I tried to, the younger the guy was, the less I tried to give to him in some ways. And we were fortunate enough to have three seniors at receiver, and then a senior tight end as well. And then I'm really, the rest of them are freshmen. So I tried to just tailor to kind of where they were at in their progression in our system. You know, the older they were, the more I could kind of tell them the little tidbits here and there. And I didn't need to tell everyone, you know, I didn't need to clutter some guys' minds with some highbrow AP stuff when they're still trying to remember what their route is on this route, you know? So I think that helped our guys a lot this year. Just try to just play and make plays and give them a lot of confidence to do that.
You know, for me, I think our quarterback did very good. You know, in my history, having good quarterbacks, you know, looking at it, we had a really good one of James Madison, and then, you know, Dak with Mississippi State. You know, Wyatt here is the guy that can take the offense and run with it. I think it's so important. And I don't think many coaches are smart enough to come up with the perfect call against every coverage, against every defense, and have the perfect plays called. And so, you know, what I try to get the guys to do is basically they're the offense coordinators on the field. And so they, you know, our hashtag was carte blanche this year, is kind of an inside joke a little bit with our room. But you know, I really believe in that for an offense to be successful, especially this offense and this scheme where the quarterback's making decisions in every play, it's hard to guess. Okay, you know, we need to read this side on this field. Well, you know, we try to teach it, you know, the whole thing, so they're able to. Well, why it was so good at this year was recognizing defense and then getting to the right play. I can't tell you how many times that I called a play, I'm banging my table, what a crappy play call, and then all of a sudden he's checking out and getting to a great play. And so
freedom is the main thing, you know, I think. And so obviously the benefit of having a smarter guy and intelligent guy like we have, who's talented as well.
Guys, I appreciate your time and you guys taking some time out of recruiting and all you got to do here to spend some time with us and help coaches get better. If there's guys out there with any questions for you, what's the best way to connect?
Yeah, I think probably just our emails on the website. And, yeah, just to be kind of our names at linfield.edu. And feel free, absolutely, to reach out. Our Twitter's, I think, what, at Coach Bomey and at Coach Elliott? Or no, at, is that what it is?
Yeah, my Twitter's at Coach B. Elliott.
Yeah.
Two T's.
I think mine's at Coach Bomey on the tweets.
Awesome. We'll put both of the links in our show notes as well. Guys, thank you again. I really appreciate you taking the time and helping coaches out here. And best of luck to you and the Wildcats in 2020.
Awesome. Thanks, Keith.
Thank you.